Il-program li ser tisimaw u għamiġjub li l-kombixxu għattajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the program that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. I'm very pleased to have with me today in the studio of University Matters, Dr. Carmen Sammut. Dr. Sammut is a senior lecturer in the Department of International Relations here at the university, and her particular interest is in media and international communication. Dr. Sammut read for her PhD at Goldsmiths College, University of London. However, she's not only an academic, a theorist, but has considerable experience in the media, having worked as a journalist with public broadcasting services here in Malta and as a freelancer with other channels. She has chaired a committee that revised the code of ethics for journalists, and she regularly features in the media as an analyst. Dr. Sammut is author of Media and Maltese Society. Recently, she spent some months in Nablus in Palestine, where she was researching social media and political engagement while teaching at the Faculty of Media at the Annajar National University. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Patricia, for that introduction.
I think that's this research that you've been doing in Nablus, I've read a little bit about it, and it really does sound interesting and very positive. I'd just like to ask you, what made you choose the University of Annajar or Palestine in general for your research into this kind of political engagement? It's not the easiest place, I would imagine, to sort of just up and go and do some research.
Yes, I did not know what to expect, actually, before.
That's sometimes better.
Because when you're traveling in the Middle East, or when you intend to to carry out research in the Middle East, you read quite a lot. But I think that you start understanding the processes at stake when you are experiencing and when you are living in that context. Now, I was very interested to go there, and actually I have to say that my visit there was facilitated by the Maltese representative in Ramallah, Mr. Alim Bujaya, who had been trying to connect Maltese academics with Palestinian academic institutions. And I was one of the academics who were approached to see whether I was interested to go. And I had my sabbatical coming up, and I thought it would be a brilliant place to go, because last year we have experienced the Arab Spring, and we've been reading about this, the Facebook revolution, the Twitter revolution, and I kept wondering how people living in the occupied Palestinian occupied territories, how they were experiencing the social media, and whether the social media were actually going to make a difference. And that is what inspired me to go in the first place.
When we see images of Palestine on the news, unfortunately, it's usually in slightly rather violent context. On the news, sometimes we do get interviews with politicians talking about Palestine, but universities don't really feature very much in the record on the news. How many universities are there in the occupied territories?
There are a number of key universities. Annajar is, I believe that at the moment it is the biggest, and it is very well, it ranks very well among Arab universities. I think it comes in the sixth place. They're very keen to establish relations with international universities, and I hope that eventually there will be a memorandum of understanding between our universities and Annajar. And then there is Bir Zeit University, Al-Quds, the University of Bethlehem is also interesting because it is a Catholic university in a Muslim country, I had the opportunity to visit all these universities, and I've been doing some teaching at Al-Quds as well. It was interesting, and as you said, the context impacts education. In fact, most of the students I met there, well, their education was disrupted by the Intifada. We have to remember that the second Intifada, which impacted on Nablus a real lot. Nablus was isolated until 2007. It was literally isolated from the rest of the West Bank because there was the Hawara checkpoint, and it was very difficult to get in and out of the city. And during the second Intifada, which was fought into the narrow streets of the old city of Nablus, and you can still see the impact of those years. Young people who died, you know, they call them martyrs with pictures everywhere. The city was split into three, and families could not visit each other. So now in Palestine, there is one thing which I really appreciated while I was there. You asked me, it's not easy. It's not easy to decide to go, but when you go there, they try to make it easier for you, because I found that they really appreciate the effort of internationals who go there to teach and to help out. And they really, really make it easy for you. Even the students, they're very willing to help you. I had to help me do, you know, with translations, because my knowledge of Arabic is very, very minimal.
But you managed to lecture in?
I lectured in English, yeah. But most of the students understand English, and many faculties actually teach in English. But also I had a translator available, so they really made it, and they tried to make me feel at home, and I appreciate that effort. I was referring to the impact of the Intifada on education. Most of the students had their education interrupted. They received education in homes, in private homes. Most of the university students at that time, they used to sleep in dorms, and most of the dorms were actually shops, which were turned into a dormitory at night, you know. About 6 or 7 journalism students were killed during the Intifada, and some people are still under arrest to date, you know. So it is a difficult context. And what shocked me is the wall. There is a wall that surrounds the whole of the West Bank. Now, most of us, well, we read about the wall, but when you experience it, it's a surreal situation, because most of us, you know, we keep referring to the fall of the Berlin Wall. But there are walls which still exist today, and it separates families. So people in Nablus is a mountainous region, they can see the sea, which is only about 20, 30 kilometers away, but they cannot go to the beach because there is a wall. To go anywhere, you have to pass through the checkpoints. And Palestinians and Arabs are often humiliated. They're herded, and you have to go through turnstiles. They remind you of, you know, it's as if you're less than a human being. Mm. Most of the students cannot visit Jerusalem, which is deemed to be, well, the holy city for the Muslims as well. So there are particular circumstances there which impact people's education, but they really appreciate that if they cannot get out of the West Bank or of the occupied territories, at least they appreciate the international effort. And there were over 60 international lecturers at Najah. So
that's amazing.
There are a lot of people who go there.
We tend to say that education is the answer to all our problems, you know. Oh yes, if we had enough education, whether it's talking about conservation or whether we're talking about political issues or sectarian violence, or, you know, education, is it going to be the answer to this problem, or how does it help the Palestinians in Nablus, in the West Bank? How is it helping them? Is it helping them?
There was a time when I was a kid when they used to tell us, if you want someone to eat, you know, teach him how to fish or how to grow. Now, I mean, from my recent experience in North Africa and in the Middle East, we just realized that is not enough. You need, you know, some kind of political stability and economic development. I mean, the amount of graduates who are unemployed across North Africa is astounding. And this is there is a similar situation in the West Bank. At Najah, it is quite interesting. Although, you know, Nablus has experienced a regression into tradition as a result of the Intifada, but 60% of the students are women, are female. It is, you know, the same percentage we have in our university.
Yes, I was going to say, sounds familiar.
Most of those women will never work, really. Tradition is still very important, but also there are no available jobs. One-third of the Palestinians in the West Bank are unemployed. One out of every three. And one-fourth of the students are underemployed. So there is a fantastic transport system in the West Bank. It's really brilliant. Share taxis and you can get from one place to the other in no time. And it's really cheap. It's a brilliant system. You don't have buses, but there are there's this system of shared taxis. Most of the taxi drivers, they speak perfect English. And I met psychologists who are, you know, accountants, some of them with masters from the United States, you know, who are driving cabs. And it is a pathetic situation in a way. I mean, they cannot go anywhere. They cannot travel. And they are really stuck. In a way, I understand the frustration, and I'm quite surprised that there is a lot of resilience resilience, and also some people are resigned to the situation, I feel, as well.
Well, you can't blame them for not really seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, can you? I mean, given the efforts that have gone on over the years, and somehow the results haven't been so wonderful.
True, but let us be positive. Yes. You know, we never know what's around the corner.
Exactly.
Who would have told us that apartheid would end, that the Berlin Wall, or, you know, that communism was going to fall in Eastern Europe? It was when the change came, we were quite positively surprised, and maybe a miracle will happen in the Holy Land.
You're quite right. I mean, you know,
who would
have thought that the Cold War would end, even, I mean, that, which was part of my childhood.
Yeah. There aren't too many indications that there is going to be a positive change, but maybe.
You never know. What about what gets taught at Nablus University? You were within the Faculty of Media.
It is Nablus. Najah has two campuses. There is an old campus and a brand new campus, which is brilliant, really. I cried when I left my office at Najah. It's a very nice building. And I have to say that Palestine receives a lot of aid, especially from Gulf states. So the Faculty of Media, you know, they have one of the best radio stations in the West Bank, which is brilliant because they have full-time staff there, and it has a very high audience, big audience. And also, when you look at research surveys, it is one of the most trusted radio stations, which is interesting because obviously there are other media organizations which are not trusted by publics. They have partisan leanings, etc. But the university radio is trusted. And radio is important in Palestine. Not too many people buy newspapers. Newspapers are not influential. But radio and TV are very important. Now, to go back to the Faculty of Media, so I said there is this radio station, they have the facilities, they need more human resources. And that is why I was asked
to go and teach
in that department. But then they also have a very good medical faculty. Brilliant, nice, very nice building. They're building a university hospital, state of the art. Yeah. Really nice, but they lack the human resources. We have to remember that there are a lot of Palestinians that are living as diasporas overseas. They are refugees. And I met a lot of Palestinian professors who lived for 25 years, 30 years, or even more, from all over the world, you know. I mean, and the faculty, people who are teaching in Spain or in Scandinavia. And then when they grow older, they somehow want to give back something to their own country, and they return to teach. So academically, I found it a very eclectic environment. Over here, most of us have PhDs from Britain, from the United States, maybe Italy, few European countries. But over there, there's people bring academic experience from a wider variety from a wider context. I mean, I met people who have a PhD from South Africa, medical PhD, or from Moscow, from the US, different American cities, Germany. Obviously, the reason for this is that these countries offer scholarships to Palestinians, and then they go there. Sometimes they spend 10 years or more, and they can maybe even live there. And then they go back, and in a way, I find it a very interesting academic context.
A positive thing for the, yes, for the students, I can imagine.
For the students, and even for myself as an academic, because I met people who came from maybe, you know, different background from the one I'm used to, which was interesting.
And what about the things you did there? You did obviously some research, I presume. You followed up on your research.
I'm still conducting the research. In fact, next week or the week after, I will be back in Nablus. And I spent 3 or 4 months there, and during that time, I was absorbing the context, and because no matter how much you read, you're never prepared for what you're going to find there. And it took me quite a while to. I did not feel prepared to start doing the empirical work. I needed the time to absorb
more total
the context,
immersion,
to learn more about it, and. And now I feel more prepared to conduct the research. I'm interested in the way in which, in the social media and political engagement. And as I said earlier, there is this idea which is quite popular in the press, you know, that there were Facebook revolutions and Twitter revolutions or whatever in North Africa. Now, from my preliminary work there, I found, first of all, Palestine is a particular context in the sense that they do not have an urban secular regime which has been there for 30, 40 years like you had in Tunisia, in Egypt. And you didn't have a popular discontent with a regime. This is, the West Bank is an occupied territory, and they do have a Palestinian authority, and the two key issues which surface in the social media as well, which are mirrored, are the occupation, obviously, the Israeli occupation, and also there's a lot of concern about the split, they call it. The split is what they experienced politically in 2008, when the West Bank fell under the under Fatah, under the Palestinian Authority, and Gaza became quite isolated, and they are under Hamas. And it's almost impossible for a Palestinian from the West Bank to go to Gaza or vice versa, because they have to travel. Okay, Palestinians can only exit the West Bank via Jordan. But you can only enter, they can only enter Gaza from Egypt. So you can imagine what
the whole circle,
yes, how difficult, almost impossible it is.
Gosh.
But I don't want to go into this. The split is something which really concerns Palestinians, and it is a big issue there. Even when it comes to, you know, I mean, I think that people who support Hamas in the West Bank and people who support Fatah in Gaza, they have, issues, and internal issues. And all this is reflected in the media and the way in which people use the social media.
From the practical point of view, how broadband and this sort of thing, are they well set up for internet? And because yes. obviously to have a good Facebook.
Yes, yes, definitely. About
connection, you need good broadband.
Palestinians, they have one of the biggest Facebook diffusion. Much more, I mean, in Palestine, it is close to 50% of the young people, of the people, of the population, and most of them are under 30. So we can say that the whole population, you know, which is under 30 years of age is connected to Facebook. Whereas in Egypt, you only have about 11%. In Tunisia, you have about 27%. So let's say Facebook diffusion is very, very wide.
So a major means of communication amongst the
younger generation. Yes, so people use it, but they do not trust it. For instance, most of the young people I used to teach, they never put their own picture on Facebook, never ever, for a number of reasons, political reasons, but also social reasons, especially girls. You know, they suspect that maybe their picture will be used in immoral pictures and they will ruin their chances of getting married. It's quite interesting. And you hardly ever, I only know one student who has put her own picture on Facebook, one female student. Some of the males, they do use their pictures, but very few. And they also feel that Facebook accounts, email accounts, they are easily monitored and hacked. So they do not trust the system that much. And also, there were attempts to try to use Facebook to stir some kind of, you know, political, to mobilize people, but the accounts were closed down.
So the monitoring perhaps is so a there's reality a lot of, rather than...
So it is, and these are the things which you learn when you start interacting with people. So it is an interesting context to look at. And who has closed it down? Which reasons? For which reasons? So, you know, are the social media always empowering? And who decides whether they are empowering or not?
Good point. And Twitter as well, does that
Twitter exist? Is not as popular as Facebook. Not yet. Possibly it is a situation which is similar to what we are experiencing in Malta. I don't think that Twitter is as widely diffused, although it is growing, slowly growing. Mm. But
Not yet. Possibly. One of the things that I noticed from the website, because I went into the Anaja website and I found it very informative, and there were there were articles or texts all about what you had been doing and the things that you've been doing, the lectures you've been giving and seminars and all that sort of thing. It was very well recorded. And one of the things that interested me was...
They have a very good public relations. It's overactive.
Yeah, well, I suppose they look very interested. The students, was well attended. I mean, you could see from the photographs.
Yes, definitely.
And one of the things that interested me was the video conferencing with our students here in Malta, and I wondered how that had gone, how it was received, both from the side of Al-Anaja students and from our students as well.
This is the beauty of technology these days, and we're using this technology because it really, really, you know, lowers the boundaries. You can have a wall, but, you know, virtually. Through using internet connectivity, through Skype, really. It doesn't cost anything, but it can be a very effective channel for students and for universities to communicate. And from Najah, we got together a group of Palestinian students and academics. And
Just media students?
We got together a number of academics from various fields who know the Palestinian question. And we put this question, could there be, you know, is there, should the Palestinian question, or is the Palestinian question, well, could it be resolved through a one state solution or a two-state solution.
Oh, so it was a very specific
It was a specific question, and we got Palestinian academics, and they were giving their opinion. And then we had a very good crowd at our university. Actually, I was pleasantly surprised because the camera, you know, was set on the first two rows, and I thought there are 20, 30 people. And then towards the end, they moved the camera, and I saw a room full of students. And I was really, really pleasantly surprised that so many people were interested in this. And it was a very interesting interaction because our students could see the way in which Palestinian academics are assessing their own situation, and they were able to ask questions. So it didn't cost any money. It didn't cost, we didn't need to get permits for them to cross the checkpoints and airports, etc.
Excellent
and
solution.
It was a very interesting interaction. I think that's It will be something which will be repeated with other universities. I mean, I know that our university does this all the time. You can get experts in various fields, and so it is something which will be repeated, definitely.
Did the students themselves participate, or was it mostly they listened and the academics spoke?
No, the students were asking questions. They were making comments. And I've been in a number of such conversations, even with other universities at Najah. We were connecting with Mexico, with the United States, and actually I was invited to give my view as an international academic in a Palestinian context, you know. And I found that it was a very interesting experience indeed. At one point we had a video conference with a university in Mexico, and the students had to go there at like 5:30 in the morning or 6:00 in the morning because of the time distance. But they were there, and they were asking interesting questions.
And you're going to be going back to
I will be going back, yes, for a few weeks to round up my research. And also I think that, it is important for us as academics to, you know, maintain a relationship with other universities. Most of my contacts up to now have been with European universities. But I think that we're teaching international relations in a Mediterranean context, and the Palestinian question is a very important issue for us. So I will surely maintain my relationship with that university.
I wish you buon lavoro.
Thank
and,
you.
I hope everything goes as smoothly as possible.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
You very much. For Thank you, Dr. Carmen Sam.
Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in this series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye. Il program li għadkom kem smajtu kien miġju plilkom biex xewqata' tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.